Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. And we are going through the news, highlighting things that are happening. Sometimes there are things that are big. We were talking about nuclear weapons. That's huge. We also have covered the Hurricane Maria that is currently pounding Puerto Rico, and then also the Mexico earthquake. And Walker Wildman in the studio with me. These are stories that we are posting up on Facebook so that people can read them for themselves. Like you said, do a little further reading if you want to get a few more details, because sometimes we go through these fairly quickly.
That's right. Oftentimes we can only mention maybe the first paragraph or just kind of give you a brief overview of what's going on. But yeah, a lot of folks, you know, they want to read more information, which is really good. You know, it's, I would encourage our listeners, and I know y'all already do this, it's just to look more into what we talk about, read it for yourself, don't just take our opinion. And that's why we provide the articles, the original sources of all these news stories on our Facebook page.
And we also have comments. People will comment about stories and put their own take on things. Every once in a while, we'll pop a comment into the discussion. We can't do that very often, but we do try to do that. So Facebook for today's issues, and you can watch us if you are of a mind to on Facebook Live. Not sure why you would want to take a look at us. Walker's, you know, relatively good looking, but myself and our next guest, Steve Jordahl. Steve, we're not exactly we have faces for radio.
Exactly.
We're not ashamed to admit it.
And, hey, well, I don't have a voice for radio, so
no, you do. Oh, sure, you do.
You do okay. You know, I did a little bit of voice work. You know, like announcing and stuff for videos and voiceovers and that kind of stuff. And they tell me that it's not necessarily the radio voice, as you think about it, that's going to get them. It's a voice with distinction.
Yes.
Something that sets the voice apart. Generally something that's not annoying, like, you know, some people have vocal cord nodules and they sound like Rod Stewart when they talk. But no, Walker, you have that tinge of the South in your voice, and I think it's rather engaging.
Well, and you know, Steve, some of us have annoying voices. We just can't help it.
Wow, that was annoying.
Yes, it was.
No, often I'll call people, and I know we'll get to the news stories. This is not really a news story. But I'll call, you know, when you listen to yourself and you're around people in the South, you don't think you sound country or Southern.
Right.
But then I'll call somebody like an operator in, you know, up north or out west, and I say, wow, you got a thick accent. And I'm like, really?
Oh.
And she's like, yeah, you do. And then I'll go ask my wife, do I really sound that Southern? And she goes, yep, you do.
Now,
so it must be true.
Is Lexi from around here?
Well, yeah. She's originally from Louisiana.
So she shares the accent. I'd never really
spoken to her much. Mine's a lot thicker than hers and a lot thicker than a lot of people.
So, go ahead.
I just was going to say, I've now living here for a year and a half.
You're from Colorado.
I'm from California,
right.
And then Colorado, and then here. There are a lot of Southerners who outdo you by miles when it comes to
country.
Southern, in terms of Southern accent. Yeah, no. Some people I can't even understand. Oh, man.
Well, you know what's? I'll just tell you what's most frustrating. Now, I've lived in a lot of states. Was born in the Boston area, grew up in New Hampshire, but have lived in New Mexico, Arizona, California, Arkansas, Texas, Mississippi since 1985. What's most frustrating to me in terms of accents? Because sometimes I slip into New England and then I do.
Yeah, Baston's got nothing on
Baston,
New England. Yeah.
Is when I'm trying, I do the, when I speak into, like doing text, I will speak.
Uh-huh.
There's a little microphone and then it transcribes what you say. It comes up with some of the weirdest things, and I know that's because it can't read my accent.
It might be. Do you have problems with speech to text?
Does no,
tend to get you
well,
okay?
I think that's a pretty universal problem because
not from those of us in the West.
Well, you have to ask what accent, what part of the country is Apple or other smartphones basing their
Apple
interpretations off of?
Apple was is based in Cupertino, where I used to work in it's in the Silicon Valley.
Yeah, but you got to be careful with that interpreting what you say, because there's some stuff that can come out.
Oh yeah, don't ever send before you proofread it.
Yeah, check it out first.
All right. Steve Jordahl, we've been talking to him for a while, a reporter and news anchor for American Family News. He comes in for the third segment every day, unless he's not here in the office, for today's issues. So what kind of news stories do you have for us?
We've got a really tragic story out of Georgia Tech. This happened last weekend. It's just kind of simmering now under the news, but there was a shooting at Georgia Tech. It involved the Georgia Tech police, three Georgia Tech police officers, one of them which fired a bullet. And it involved a young man named Scout Schultz. Scout was a 21-year-old computer engineering major at Georgia Tech. He was the president of the school's Gay Pride Alliance and identified as non-binary is what they're calling it. He used pronoun they when he talking about himself.
So in other words,
himself.
Neither male nor female. When
right.
You say non-binary.
Right. So it's a tragedy whenever anybody gets shot, and the police, this is firmly in the realm of what you would call suicide by a cop. Scout wrote three suicide notes. And then he called 911, and he described himself to the 911 operator. This is what that sounded like.
Georgia Tech Police, how can I help you?
Hey, I'm over at West Village. It looks like there's somebody like skulking around outside. It looks like he's got a knife in his hand. I think he might have a gun on his hip.
Okay, West Village.
It looks like he might be drunk or something.
Give me a description of he, sir.
Got long blonde hair, white T-shirt, jeans.
So
blonde hair, white T-shirt.
And so that's...
he was describing himself.
He was describing himself and told the police where he was going to be. And he told them that this person, which he didn't say it was him, but this person had a gun. So police came.
And the operator has no idea
that
he's describing himself.
Oh, no. Right. No. He's just a guy. And in fact, he called himself Scott. At least it sounded like on the recording, he called himself Scott. He went by Scout at the at the college. So the police come and show up at the location, the West Village, where he said he was going to be. And somebody was looking out a window and recorded the confrontation between.
He is brandishing a knife.
He is brandishing a knife. Someone has described it as a pocket knife. I don't know. The video was certainly not clear enough to make out that distinction. But everybody seems to agree he had a weapon, a knife. And you can hear about 4 seconds into this clip. Listen for it. You can hear him shout to the police, "Shoot me."
Come on, man. Drop the knife.
Come on, let's drop it.
Drop it.
Shoot me!
No, drop the knife. Drop the knife.
Nobody wants to hurt you.
Drop the knife.
What's your name? Drop it.
Now, I've condensed that audio. That whole confrontation took well over a minute, maybe close to 2 minutes. And what would happen, and Walker, you say you've seen this video too, he would walk toward the police. They say, stop, drop the weapon, stop. He wouldn't drop the weapon, and he would just kind of walk. It wasn't running, he wasn't rushing, but he was walking toward the police, and they did what a observer or a police expert that I talked to said, the three officers were triangulating him. When he got close to one officer, another officer would call his attention, and he'd start walking toward them. Well, it went on to the point where he crossed the line where it becomes dangerous to the life of the police, and then at the end of that clip, you heard the shot. Mm-hmm. So, as will happen, Monday night, there was a vigil on campus for Scout, and it was angry but peaceful until Antifa shows up. And this is the last clip on this that I'll play, and I want you to listen to this young, what's happening here. This is an arrest. The police have a young lady, they have her on the ground. Actually, when they showed the beginning of the video, showed the police officer with blood dripping down from a skull where he had been beamed by a rock or something, and he had blood all over his face because he was injured. He was chasing this lady who we can assume was part of the group that threw the rock or the bottle or whatever it was that cut the officer. He grabbed her. He put her down to the ground quickly with a little force, but not undue force. And he reached around and he placed handcuffs on her. He didn't hit. He didn't do anything that would give you the impression that this young lady was being tortured or police brutality by my viewing. But listen to her, the panic in her voice. They are trained. Now, everybody has the protesters,
okay.
The people who come like Antifa type people are trained. Everybody has a camera nowadays, so you can't hide anything. If you listen to her voice, it sounds like she's being beaten and tortured. I mean, it throws us into a whole new level of conflict, which isn't there. Listen to this. So you can kind of hear that level of screaming, and that's what Antifa brings to these things. The expert I talked to said they hijacked the vigil for Scout and made it about anarchy and police.
Yeah.
Well, and let me just say first off, because we do want to talk about something connected to this story that we talked about in our story meeting earlier this morning. The first thing I want to say is, obviously, and I know people and family members in law enforcement. I am of the clear opinion that no police officer should be forced to put their life in danger by allowing someone with a knife to stab first and then you shoot. Okay, I mean, I think that what law enforcement generally tries to do, as far as I know, is they train their officers in order to, you know, protect the public and defuse situations and allow your police officers to be able to go home at night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think some people may say, well, you have a gun, they have a knife, you know, you should try to disarm them. No, if you can disarm someone with non-lethal force with tasers, these police officers on the campus do not have tasers.
I read that is not part of their equipment. No.
So you do.
They're expensive. Tasers are expensive, and Georgia Tech, I don't know, but at this point they don't. I bet they're going to invest in some.
Right.
Well, what I'm saying is you don't have to. You shouldn't expect police officers to be like Bruce Lee or Steven Seagal,
right.
And use a karate chop to take a knife away.
Yeah.
A knife can kill somebody, a police officer, and you should not. So I want to say that from what I've read and what I've heard that the police responded the way they were trained to.
Right.
So, but now let's go to the issue that bothers you about.
That's something that really troubled me about this. This is a young man, and I'm going to make some assumptions here that I think are reasonable, but I don't hold me to these assumptions. Number one, we know that this person was troubled because he left three suicide notes. He called police. And basically gave them his description, said he was going to shoot somebody, and made them shoot him. So this is a classic case of suicide by cop. Anybody who calls suicide, who commits suicide, is a troubled person.
Right.
But my knowing the statistics about the people who are sexually confused, or claim to be gay, or even more, claim to be transgender, Scout was somewhere in that mix. The suicide rate of those people is extremely high.
Right. Even higher, by the way, for transgender.
Even higher.
Like 40% or something.
Very high, the suicide rate. And so my question, Walker, if you were a teacher on this campus and you saw that this guy was struggling with his sexuality or just was really in trouble, would you put your career on the line by calling it out?
Yeah, no. Well, I probably...
That's a tough situation.
Your instinct is probably not to, because as we've seen, anything... And this doesn't mean... You don't even have to call them out publicly or embarrass them. If you just... Most likely nowadays on college campuses, if you just went to the counselor or a dean or something and said, look, this person's mentally unstable. I can tell that they're struggling. I think they need help. You would immediately, if that became public, would be blasted for that because you're being homophobic, you're a bigot, you're not tolerant. They're not mentally unstable. That's who they identify as. That's them. And so I think that's the angle you're getting at is can we not even help individuals who are struggling with gender, with their sexual identity? Can we not help them? And you obviously can't. But at the same time, the media is hyping this up as a LGBT individual was shot in the streets on Georgia Tech campus. Well, that is true, but what if we tried to help them before this?
He wasn't shot because he was LGBT.
No, that's a
but that's what the media.
It's a good narrative for the media, and I will have to, let me just be full disclosure here. I don't know that his sexual confusion played into his depression, which led to the suicide.
Right, he could have had a bad home life or had
any number of things. There's a bunch of statistics that talk about the rate of abuse among men who eventually turn out to be gay. We've seen this kind of political correct reversal happen in other areas too. Did you read not too long ago about the somebody in one of the communities where a terrorist attacked had their eyes on this terrorist and saw what they thought was alarming behavior, but they didn't call the police because they were afraid of being accused of being Islamophobic?
I think that was in San Bernardino.
San Bernardino case.
I think you're right.
It was the next door neighbors.
It's the same kind of thing. So to a certain extent, and I don't want to overstate this, but to a certain extent, the death of Scout Schultz can be laid at the feet of militant homosexual activism or people like GLAAD or whatever those groups, because they're the ones that are demonizing people when they won't accept the line that this is perfectly normal, it's perfectly natural.
Right.
Well, and let's take your initial belief and let's go with it, and let's take a step away from Scout's case because we don't know at this point what the suicide notes say.
No, there's three of them. I'm assuming one of them is to his parents, maybe one of them is to.
But in terms of his motivation,
right?
But let's talk about in general the clear fact that those who struggle with their sexual orientation and even more suicide, what they call ideation, for transgenders. Suicide ideation means I think about killing myself and then attempts. It's 40%. That's one study. I think it's from Europe. And let's talk about the fact that the narrative now is that you are born, homosexual, or you are born, transgender is what you are. So if you are a boy or a young man in a male body, but you feel like you're a female.
I think they would say that you're born a woman in a man's body. So the transgender part is the transition from what your physical state is to what your mental.
Right. But if that's the narrative, then what do you do with young people, especially who say, well, what if I don't want this? Everyone they go to in the mental health community is going to say, well, this is what you are, and we will help you deal with it. But to your point, Steve, if you are a professor or you're a teacher or you're a graduate assistant or even a friend and you want to help them, you are not allowed to say, well, maybe this isn't what you are.
Right.
Maybe there's hope. And my concern is that despair can set in because they think, you mean I've got to struggle with this for the rest of my life?
There's
no way out.
And it gets worse in that in several states and communities, they've actually passed laws which makes it illegal for a counselor to help somebody come out of the gay lifestyle, the transgender life decisions that they're making. It applies to kids younger than Scout, who was 21. And so the laws so far don't apply to adults. But he may have missed opportunities as a younger man.
And that's the real tragedy here. And this could deal with any type of sin that causes people emotional distress and mental distress. You know, it's... And you can relate this even to the church as Christians. if we're just even, like you said, a friend who tried to talk to him about this, if a Christian is fearful that we're going to get criticized and publicly ridiculed by our peers by even questioning whether he needs help or not, then some might just say, well, I'm just not going to say anything. I'm just going to leave it alone.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's the right thing to do. We shouldn't let fear get the best of you. But I could see how folks feel that way.
Yeah, and no one wants to be feel responsible for not intervening. You know,
right.
if Scout had lived his whole life just hurt and confused and or had found some way to come out of this, then everybody who held their tongue when he was younger or when he was showing signs would feel okay. And you never know which ones are going to go that extra length and actually hurt themselves or hurt others. And then you wish you'd have said something, but then you're still not sure. I mean, it's just a confusing time. And the militancy with which we are being demanded of to comply with political correctness and with this whole new world of sexuality, it is hurting more than just... It's hurting this country. It's not just the Christian witness. Now it's livelihoods. It's your ability to support your family. Churches are going to be coming
under
fire.
It's also horrible that the rioters came in there and just took advantage of this situation.
Well, yeah, they're leeches. Yeah.
Antifa.
They latch on to these things for their own purposes.
Yeah, yeah.
And let me just say this. I don't want anyone to think that we're making light, literally, of the struggles that people may have over the issue of sexual orientation.
Well, quite the contrary.
Or trend, or their feelings of being disconnected from their biology. You know, sometimes homosexuals make fun of Christians where they say, oh, you just want to, your answer is pray away the gay. And to some extent, we deserve that criticism because I don't think we understand the struggle that some of these people have.
It
so
is.
let me just say, yeah. Start off by saying, we're not making light of that. But if you could say to a person who is struggling and you say, okay, listen, here's the biblical view that I have. You, like every one of us, is broken, and you happen to be broken in your sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a way for you to have a relationship with God and to receive some healing in terms of the way you view yourself. Your identity is not locked in to this category. I think that could go to a long ways towards helping people, even if they struggle with those feelings the rest of their lives and battle them like we all battle temptations and we all battle sinful impulses. That could go a long way towards giving some of these young men and women a little breathing room.
Chances are that they're not going to be the desires and the temptations, the way they face their sexuality it's not going to be healed as in a miraculous, now I'm attracted to women or now I'm...
It can happen with some.
It has happened. I've known many people that's happened to, but I've known more where it hasn't happened to. But what happens, Ed, and you hit the nail right on the head, is now we have a new identity. We're not gay. We are Christian.
Right.
Christian who struggles like all Christians. And that's the ultimate healing.
Right.
Is a relationship with God.
And that becomes the identity, and now it's not a relationship with myself, looking in the mirror, trying to figure out how I can make myself this or
that. I don't see myself as gay. I see myself as a child
of the
king.
I have a vertical relationship with God. All right, folks, we are out of time, and I like this discussion we had. It's a discussion we'll have many, many times going on into the future. Ed Vitagliano, Walker Wildman, Steve Jordahl. We want to give our thanks also to Abe Hamilton and Chris Woodward, who are in here for today's issues. More great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. Please stay tuned for that, and Lord willing, we'll see you tomorrow.